Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can all go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, interesting people pop in to rent something. We go through the films that they've loved across their life, and we are just here to help you figure out what you could be watching on streaming platforms and out in cinemas. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop.
Did you see the thing yesterday on the TV?
Top of the morning.
Good morning, Russell.
You really like give it a go, eh?
Right?
I'm just like,
you got to start high and then drop down very quickly.
How are you, G-Force?
All right, and yourself?
You're cool, man. How are you, P-Dog?
I'm good. G-Force is a way cooler name.
Yeah. Welcome to the video store. Thank you for wandering in. It's nice to see you. I hope you're keeping warm. We have ourselves the guest episode today, which is where interesting customers pop in to rent something. And today on the show, we're going to have the guys behind The Universe on Stage.
Yeah.
So if you've come to the Bioscope, if you know of the show, then I think it'll be great to really hear the stories and the people behind it. But if you have no idea what I'm talking about, The Universe on Stage is a show that we put on here at the Bioscope, which is now growing and expanding outside of the Bioscope. But it effectively is a talk about the universe, about so cool. Space, about black holes, but most interestingly, done to a musical accompaniment. Mm. Two very talented, very smart people are behind it, Yash and Luca.
Cool.
And they are going to come in to rent something soon. So I'm very curious to see how they came to be. And tickets for more performances, because we keep adding more. It's a nice little gym and sort of playground for them to develop their shows.
Cool.
Tickets are in July and on sale now at thebioscope.co.za. We'll have a link in the description.
Amazing.
But it's definitely, if this is the kind of thing that you're interested in, it's definitely worth just following them. Because they are going to keep doing stuff and do more. But I think I'm just going to make a quick announcement for everyone who is browsing the store.
Attention all customers, this is to let you know that the Encounters Documentary Film Festival is nearby. It's on its way. It's going to be happening in Cape Town and Johannesburg from the 20th to the 30th of June. And when it comes to Johannesburg, the Bioscope is proud to be one of the venues. All the tickets for the Bioscopes program can be available at thebioscope.co.za. Otherwise, you can go to encounters.co.za. Great documentaries, both local and international.
Let's get into it. Have you guys got something to keep you busy?
Yeah, I'll be good. I've got to rearrange some shelves.
All right. What do you want to focus on?
Let's go for... Let's go for the period romance movies.
The period romance movies. I didn't know we had a shelf.
We've got dozens in stock, so it's gotta be reorganized. You know? Right. Yeah,
Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah,
and
it's
all of
literally just 13 copies of that. So I'm just putting
there is a very interesting period film coming out soon, which I want to talk about. So let's perhaps after the chat.
Okay.
Let's have a little chat about some other stuff that's coming out that we're watching.
Okay.
G-Force, what are you going to do?
What am I going to do? Oh, I know what I'm going to do. You know, a while ago I tricked some kids into renting Alien?
Yes.
Now I'm going to trick some art house kids into renting Alien Resurrection because it was directed by the same guy as Amelie.
Jean-Pierre
Jeunet. So I can be like, this is from the director of Amelie, you'll love it. And then they watch a terrible movie.
Oh, did he not nail it?
Dreadful.
It's awful.
He should stick.
It's the worst Alien movie.
Oh, yeah, by a mile.
Well, I wouldn't give the director of Amelie an Alien movie.
It should have been Danny
no
Boyle.
No one would.
It sounds like a cuck idea.
Danny Boyle was supposed to direct this. And then he was like, nah.
Well, speaking of, not so much aliens, but speaking of space and the universe, let's get into it. This is the guys from Universe on Stage popping in to rent something. Look who it is. It's the Universe on Stage.
Finally.
How are you guys?
Fantastic. We had a show last night and feeling a little bit tired.
But had a big gig.
Had a big gig of 47 people.
I love it, man. You guys were at the Bioscope last night. How did you find it?
It was our 25th show. 25th sold-out show since we started.
I'm glad that you've been counting because I've lost count.
Yeah. No, we're trying to kind of keep this record, and it's a little bit silly because part of me doesn't want to break that record now. There's a sort of this desire to just keep going until how far we can go.
The record being sold-out shows.
Sold-out shows. Back-to-back sold-out shows.
Yeah. Literally from the moment we started, I don't know whether you guys know what the Bioscope looks like empty or sort of half full. This is perhaps us having this chat now. How was it for you, Yash?
I think it was one of our best. There are days where we just synergize in terms of his speech and my playing.
Yeah.
And last night was just, we were on fire.
There are those shows, and I can speak on this, and this is what I want to talk about, is the fact that I immediately could see that you guys are like a band.
Mm.
You know, you're somewhere between a theater show and a TED talk. We'll get into exactly what the universe on stage is, and I think I'd perhaps be nice to have it come from you as opposed to me. But when we've gotten to know each other and when we've gotten to chat, I've seen you guys like a band. You could be performing anything. And I know exactly what you're talking about. There are those shows, and I know this from Short Straw, that there's ones where you're just like, I can't do anything wrong. Yeah. I've got this audience in the palm of my hands. This is amazing.
You vibe. You know, there's moments where I'm changing the pace and the poetry of my voice to match Yash's intonation of the music. And I feel like I'm floating on the wave of his sound. It's fantastic. And there are other times where something takes me out of it and I'm disconnected.
Yes.
As an example, our last show was hilarious. It had been about a month since we had done the show and we hadn't really rehearsed because at this point we'd done it so many times. I'm busy doing the show and I get to this slide. I'm like, Yash is not playing the music. Is he forgotten something?
Mm.
And I'm talking and talking. And then I click the next on the slide. I'm like, oh, I forgot something. I completely skipped the whole section.
Yeah.
And I had to find a way to get back to what I was saying. And that distracted me. No. And I was all over the place.
But let me tell you, there are those days. And like sometimes with Short Straw, I'd be in front of, I don't know, it's 6,000 people at Splashy Finn. And I'd go, oh my God, how the fuck does this song start again? Yeah. Like, which one? Oh my God. And you just blank.
I did have one of those moments yesterday. I was like, what do I play here at this part again? But I just had to improvise. That was pretty poetic what you said there, floating on the wave of my sound. And I like that. We need to write that down.
But that is the point. So let's just get into it. The universe on stage is a performance.
Yes.
It's a roughly 45, perhaps, what are you clocking?
Like at the bio show, about 50 minutes.
Yeah, just under an hour, where effectively you're talking about the universe and the wonders of space and the amazingness of the universe. So obviously two visuals. So it's a talk. That's the sort of TED talky part where it's a smart science talk to a soundtrack that is performed live by Yash, who's next to you playing piano, and this is how I've sort of sold it to people, this kind of Hans Zimmer-esque, let's put it, sort of cinematic music.
We literally call it a cinematic TED talk concerto. That's sort of the
and there was another one, a symphony.
Science and symphony. That's our tagline. It's a science and symphony.
It's so good. And let me tell you, just so from my side, I have always said to people, if people sort of ask, what have I learned in 14 years of the Bioscope? And the one thing I've learned is that people are smart. Audiences are smart. Just in general, and as a whole world, we're getting smarter and savvier and more, you know, because we can learn so much more with smartphones. But just in general, the Bioscope's audience is a smart audience that's seeking out.
Yeah.
They want to learn. That's why the documentaries have always done well over the years. And whenever like 20 films in a film festival get presented, the ones that you can identify as the good ones, they get booked quick. Yeah. Audiences are smart.
Yeah.
So people want to learn. So when you came one day on a whim. Do you remember this day?
Yeah. I was wandering around. I was going towards being there for some coffee and I was like, I know the Bioscope. Well, I've heard of it. Let me go inside. And then there's Russell.
Yeah. And we met. That was us meeting for the first time where you presented this idea. You were like, I've been thinking about this sort of talk about the universe.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is going to be good.
Yeah.
This
yeah.
could be amazing.
It came off the backdrop of something that used to happen at the Orbit Jazz Club. So it was called Science and Cocktails. And
Right. Orbit. Remember the Orbit?
Yeah, my supervisor used to be one of the people who would organize this event. They would invite researchers from Wits University across the different faculties, and they would present a 20-minute talk. Then there would be these really cool cocktails with dry ice. It was very sort of new agey. And there would be a jazz band afterwards. And these events were packed, just packed with people. And people were there for science. And I was like, I want to do something similar.
And what's quite smart about jazz is that jazz is the sort of science of music in so many ways. It's the high art.
Yes, I would disagree, I think.
Jazz comes from, you know, that understanding and that knowledge and knowing what's going on and what key you can be in so that you can play. It's not a hippie free for all. It's like from an understanding of like deep musical science comes this crazy avant-garde painting.
Yeah, it's very theoretical.
Yeah.
Scientific.
Yeah.
Well, let's not get into whether we enjoy playing it or not. But
no, it's not for everyone.
Yeah.
It's the same as abstract art, you know? Yeah. It's like, it's sometimes you just want a beautiful, you know, painting of something you can recognize.
Yeah.
But it's just great that it comes from a place of intellect and smart. So you attended those?
I attended them, and there was a particular show that my supervisor gave. It was on string theory. And I've never seen a packed audience like this. The people were standing. I mean, this was an audience for around 60 people, and there must be 90, 100 people there. And they were there. They were ready to absorb the science that my supervisor was about to give. And I mean, he's a fantastic person, but I feel like he lost the audience slightly. He had a lot of equations. It was very technical.
Yeah.
And I got the sense that the audience had been excited to be in the presence of these intellectual giants, and they felt very fluffed up in terms of the ego, but I don't know if they left with a lot of curiosity.
Or whether it actually sank in.
Yeah.
You know, the rain can come down on the soil, but does it kind of actually move in and fertilize?
And for me, what's important about science is that at a public level is that it moves people to ask questions, not to feel like clever. And there is this really, really cool sort of, I started listening to this podcast called Philosophize This. And he makes a statement about the most valuable commodity to the human race, to society. It's not gold, not ore, not oil, but it's a young mind with the willingness to learn. And when you snuff out that willingness, you've lost people. What's the point?
Yeah.
And I find that most science talks are really cool. They are intellectual exchanges of information. But you leave kind of thinking, all right, well, that's way over my head. I'm never going to be able to learn this.
Yeah.
That's, to me, silly.
The biggest point of the universe on stage, correct me if I'm wrong, is to bring this science and bring this magic and this wonder to the man on the street.
Yeah. And this is where Yash comes in, to be honest.
Yeah.
The emotion that is generated through music, that I have experienced through cinema, is what gets you to move, to feel something. And I give, you know, I am essentially the veils on a boat, and Yash is the wind. And
that's a nice way to put it, yeah.
Yeah. So Yash is the one who brings it to life, really.
Yeah. How did you guys meet? Well, how do you guys know each other?
I'll let Yash tell the story.
Well, we both work at Discovery.
Okay.
I work as an actuary. He works as a data scientist. And we participated in this annual data science / actuarial competition.
Okay.
Where we ended up winning that competition, and we realized actually we work pretty well together.
What did you have to do for the competition?
So it's an innovation competition using data the best we can. So our project was using existing member data to predict health outcomes.
Okay.
So building a sort of model, a causal model to determine what variables, if we could change them by way of improved health, result.
Yash comes to me with this idea, and it's like this: I need to do this thing. We need to be able to better predict the health outcome of a member in a certain amount of time in the future. Can we use the data to help do that? And I was sort of the person who built this, what we call a causal model, so understanding the causal outcome of if X happens, Y is the outcome.
Yeah.
And We had a pretty cool model that sort of showed some interesting results, and it was a completely new technique within the company.
What would one tweak to that be for a person?
So, for example, if I am exercising, if I'm not exercising and I start exercising, what is that start of exercise? What does the start of that exercise have on my impact of developing some kind of chronic disease in 6 months' time?
With lots of love and respect, how has Discovery not done this already? Because isn't that the kind of crux of Discovery?
So the difference here is we were looking at disability rates and exactly quantifying what specific actions would have on your likelihood of disability. And then what we can say is
beyond, so it was more the opposite.
So, well, what health data suggests that you have a certain probability of claiming, and then what do we need to do for you to reduce that probability? And the difference between this and normal vitality is it says we can then quantify what we might save and give you specific tailored rewards to get you on that path.
I love the idea that vitality includes movies. Yes. And I think that's an interesting sort of point, is that, you know, to have a happy, balanced, healthy life, because you speak of, there's those great shows on, there's a great one on Netflix all about the Blue Zones.
Yes,
you know,
yes, it's the Blue
Zones.
Which
I'm sure is something that you guys sort of think about in the Discovery building at points. And part of that is just having friends, having community, having talks, having, you know, just enriching your mind.
Yeah.
You know, and cinema can do that.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that that'll be a part of your health. Someone in Discovery was like, it's not just about gym, guys. Like, we need to incentivize people to go and watch movies.
Yeah, it's anything that gets people excited is essentially a short-term reward for long-term change. And people recognize that, you know, going to movies and cinema is an exciting thing in a social manner. And so it gets people to want to do something.
Yeah, that's lovely. So you guys have done 25 shows at the Bioscope, and we've realized that this is, well, actually we realized a long time ago that this is the most successful thing we've done at the Bioscope.
Yeah.
Certainly in the live performance space, but I don't think we've ever had a film that's sold out 25 times. We've had concepts like, you know, our Dumpling Box Cinema Night should always sell out. If it doesn't, we're doing something wrong. Valentine's should always sell out. But you guys have proven my point from the beginning, which is that on a Friday night or on a Saturday night, people want to come and learn about the universe.
Yeah.
Sorry, what were you going to say?
No, go ahead.
I just have one question, which is, what are some of the things that you speak about in the show? Like, what are some of those points or those wonders? What would be a teaser trailer?
So there is the current talk that we're doing that you can kind of see now. It is all about paradoxes and the power of paradoxes in science and the power of paradoxes in our human life.
Paradox being
two ideas that are in conflict with each other and they cannot exist together. They cannot coexist.
Okay. But they kind of have to be there at the same time.
They have to be there at the same time because we exist in a world where we exist.
Yeah.
So the quick part of it is that you have two incredibly successful theories in nature. You have the theory of gravity, which is Einstein's ideas of general relativity, and the theory of the small, which is quantum mechanics. These are two independently sort of generated theories that emerged from the exploration of the universe at different scales. And at some point, we started kind of wanting to overlap them. We wanted to understand, well, does gravity and quantum mechanics, do they work together?
Could they exist at the same time?
Could they exist at the same time? And mathematically speaking, no. They just were different formulations of the universe and formulations that quantum mechanics says the world is unpredictable, chaotic, it is random, it is uncertain. And the ideas of gravity says it's very complicated, but it's predictable. I can understand how things move in space.
Okay.
And technically speaking, those ideas don't match up. When you try and come up with a theory of gravity at a very small scale, you get like these mathematical infinities everywhere. And that just does not make sense in nature. And so people thought, well, you know what, fine, it's just theoretical, it's just our mind, no biggie. And then we discovered black holes. And black holes tell us that there has to be a description of nature that exists at the large scale and at the small scale. because if it didn't, then black holes wouldn't exist.
Yeah.
And because black holes exist, because we believe the Big Bang exists, we believe there has to be a unified theory of gravity and quantum mechanics, a sort of single tapestry of physics that unites all of the laws at one.
And are we anywhere close to to figuring that out? I guess we're not, right?
No, and that's...
because we don't even know exactly what a black hole is, right?
We know what it is mathematically. We've seen pictures of it. We've seen its effect. But we can't peer inside. We can't see inside. And that's the problem. We can't do experiments that allow us to see the internal structure of a black hole that could then inform the mathematics that we have to change. It's just,
The very first universe on stage focused more on black holes. And you did something lovely where you painted this sort of scene of what it would be like if you were to look into a black hole.
Yeah, and this comes... so it's important for me to not be too scientific in what I'm talking about. It's a story. I want to tell a story.
Yeah.
And what I wanted to say in the first talk was, what would it feel like to enter a black hole without me telling the audience that you are actually entering a black hole? I'm describing the scene of being curious at this weird dark void in front of you. And as you're going, you see these weird things and things start happening. And there's the space crew at the back that is observing you, which is seeing different... images, and time is slowing down. It's this confusing thing that's happening, but it's a story.
I'm using this as a chance to also learn, what do we actually believe a black hole is?
We believe that a black hole is a, let's call it an object in space that is an old star which collapsed or which died, and because it was really big, the gravitational field around it, when it's punctured the sort of fabric of space-time, is such that the light that gets too close can't escape. So you have an event horizon from the black hole, which is the boundaries, the sort of the shadow boundary. And it's not really a thing. It's just if I have a dark room and I have the door, at some point there's I can enter my hand into the door and it goes into the shadow, out of the shadow. It's kind of like this boundary in space.
Mm.
And so... yeah, we just believe that it is a star that died and that has kind of like imploded, and that implosion created a puncture in the fabric of space-time, which created a curvature of gravity so intense that light is unable to escape if it gets too close. That's the simplest version of a black hole. You get rotating black holes, you get charged black holes, you get black holes with accretion disks.
I wanted, the base level of it.
No.
But, okay, and you yourself... what are your qualifications?
I have a PhD in string theory, specifically. Okay. And my master's was in black holes. I actually studied Stephen Hawking's paper on black holes for my master's. And I did my undergraduate in nuclear engineering. So, yeah.
Me, Jesus Christ. I was lying on the floor at Wits going, ha ha, learning how to use my diaphragm while you were like pulling your hair out.
I was using my diaphragm as well, like trying to breathe through the stress. But
that's amazing, man. And you, how old?
I'm now 33, but I finished it at 27, my PhD.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yash has got a bit of a different...
Your story, Yash?
So I taught myself piano when I was 8. My... parents had a whole lot of Queen and Simon and Garfunkel CDs that my dad used to play on our little hi-fi at home. And we also happened to have this old rickety, missing keys upright piano.
Nice.
So I'm like, let me try and see if I can replicate one of those songs.
Yeah.
So I've always been pretty good at playing things by ear, not great at reading music.
Okay.
So I stuck to that sort of vibe. And then I went, so this sort of... noticed that I could possibly play the piano.
Yeah.
So let's send him for some lessons as well. So I got into the old classical world, won a few national competitions.
Oh, look at you.
Played with the Joburg Symphony and the Cape Town Philharmonic, and that was pretty cool. But then eventually I became more academically focused. I studied actuarial science, qualified as an actuary. And that's how I ended up at Discovery meeting Luca, and he's reigniting that passion for music.
There's something very special, I think, about us is that, so my mom is an artist and my dad's an engineer. And so I was brought up with a very creative and logical side of me.
You got the nice sort of genes from each,
But I think where Yash and I merge so well is that we are creatively logical, meaning we're rational and we think through things with a lot of reason and logic. But we move through creativity and we express ourselves in a creative manner. And so we connect at the creative intersection between our skills. And I think that's what works really well with us. You know, I can't play music, he can't do science, but we can tell stories and we can feel emotion, and that's how we sort of connect.
Yeah. One of the nicest things I heard in my life was understanding the word creativity.
Yeah.
And realizing it's not what people think. Your average mainstream person sort of sees myself, you know, as a musician or a cinema owner and go, oh, he's creative. And people sort of see that they use that word a little wrong, in the sense that sometimes they think they're talking about expression. But creativity is problem solving. And it's using that part of your brain to think your way out and having to think in a different way to create a solution to a problem. Whether you're having to come up with an advert for a nappy in advertising, I'm just drawing on my own personal experience, or if you're an engineer, which is like, how do we make that work? There's got to be an arm that comes, and how does that arm move? And, you know, you call on all your physics. But it's problem solving.
Yeah,
and that was one of the nicest things. And that's very different to expression, where you want to have color and paint and you know, or dancing is an expression of your body.
Yeah,
it's very different to creative problem solving. Yeah, which an engineer is the perfect example. So you studied engineering, hey? That's what you said you started with.
Yeah, I started with nuclear engineering. this is a funny story. I loved science as a kid. You know, I was breaking apart toys and playing with motors, and I was in the garden.
Yeah.
So I always kind of liked science. And then I get to grade 11 and I see these Prada sunglasses that I want to buy. And it's expensive. So my mom says, I'm not buying these for you. Figure it out. So I start selling cookies. Yeah. I start going to school, and I went to King Edward's, and I start selling cookies, 300 cookie. And they start getting big. And I'm like I'm selling 60 cookies a day almost.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is pretty cool. You know, and
you were baking them.
I was baking them. I used my mom. I would bake them, and she would clean the kitchen every single day. And I didn't pay her. I didn't pay for the ingredients.
Because this is the entrepreneurship.
She thought this was going to last for, I think, maybe a week at most. Yeah. It went on for about 6 months. And eventually I started to pay for it. But I was baking at some point 180 cookies a day. I had a girl come past my house. She would take 60 cookies. I at her school. I would pay her salary. And this was going on for like 6 months, right? Yeah. And I was thinking, screw science. I'm going to become a cookie baker. I'm going to start a factory with Spa, and I'm going to go big. And then I got a pamphlet that was on this new course, which is nuclear sciences and engineering. And it just sparked something inside of me. I saw there, you know, in third year, you can do quantum mechanics and special relativity. And it got my juices flowing. So I was speaking to my dad, and he said, listen, you don't need to study entrepreneurship to become an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Engineering, science, if do that, and if you want, you'll have the necessary problem-solving skills to do what you have to do afterwards.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. I went into nuclear science engineering. I really don't like the engineering side of things. I liked the physics. I had amazing lecturers, really, really good teachers. And so I went all the way in third year, at which point I was almost wanting to drop out, because I hated the fact that I could not do my physics. I had to do engineering, and I was doing bad engineering because I wanted to do my physics.
Where were you studying?
At Wits.
Yeah, lovely.
And there were like some engineering subjects where it was almost failing. I got 49%, and the dean of science said, I can't fail you on this because you like doing 80% in physics doesn't make sense. So he gave me a condoned pass on the premise that I improved my engineering marks slightly. And I got to the third year and I wanted to quit. I was like, I felt dumb. I felt stupid because the scholastic system was making me feel stupid because I couldn't get the marks that I wanted, and the marks not a reflection of who I am. Anyway, I basically took a gap year after the third year. I didn't go into my honors. I took a gap year doing computer science, computational applied mathematics, and maths major. But what was amazing about this, and this is at the heart, I think, of my spirit and who I am, is that I got to just have fun. I got to play. I joined the Maths Olympiad. I did random stuff. I tried to solve an unsolved conjecture called the Collatz conjecture. And I was just messing.
I don't even know what that is.
The point is, I was just messing around.
Yeah.
And I was having fun. And it reignited this love for science and physics. And I went into my honors with this passion. And I went to my master's with passion. And my PhD with passion. And for me, if you're not having fun, what are you doing?
Of course, yeah. You guys are hoping to play more. And there was this point where, as we were chatting and, you know, doing this Bioscope shows, why I see you guys as a band is because you started saying band things, where you were like, we got to play bigger venues, we got to play more shows, we got to tour. And I think that's so great that the Bioscope can be this training ground, it can be a little gym, That's what it is for stand-up comedy. You know, bigger comedians would come and rent the cinema for a week, or, you know, we share the door, but we do shows for a week so that they can work out new material. So it's exciting that you guys are talking and planning about bigger shows and being in bigger venues and, you know, things like, we long since spoke about it, but how amazing would it be to do something at the new version of the Planetarium when it's finished?
Yeah.
You know, to be in bigger theaters, it's exciting. And I think that's it's where you guys are destined to keep going and growing. I mean, you can travel the world with this.
Yeah.
There's you can play academic conferences, or you could do corporate events, but you can also, you know, you think of a guy like André Rieu bringing classical music to the people of Europe. You know, he performs in these town squares, and, you know, you get these heart-wrenching moments when young kids sing classical music. Yeah. And it's like, you could do that for science. You have that ability, and it's just so exciting that it's something unique and different, and it's yours. Like, I think it's important to mention, Yash, that you started by playing Hans Zimmer, literally, but now you're playing your own music.
Yeah,
right?
Actually, Luca's original version of this talk was one he did at one of our earlier actual conferences, where he did the talk and he had a background of Hans Zimmer's Interstellar.
Yeah.
And then the idea sort of stemmed from that. He's like, do you want to maybe come and do, I met Russell at the Bioscope and we have this cool venue that we can perform at. Do you want to just perform that Hans Zimmer song in the intro? And then that evolved into, what if you added specific other Hans Zimmer pieces throughout the talk? So we did that for a few months. And then eventually we're like, if we scale this talk, we can't exactly be using Hans Zimmer's music. Why don't you get into composition? And I think this is the first time in my life that I actually started composing my
I was about
music.
To say, what is your history with that? Because not many musicians can. We can all play the sheet music, but to compose it is completely different.
So I think
that is a whole other kettle of fish.
And you never know until you try. So I tried it out and we got some good pieces. Also, it's quite in a sense that you wouldn't think that in a traditional band, there's a lot of ideas bouncing off bandmates.
It's an organism that flows. Yeah.
Exactly. And you wouldn't think that with a physicist and a musician, maybe there might not be as much of that.
Yeah.
But there's been a lot of that. We spend like a few hours every weekend just brainstorming, and even like parts of the talk, I was like, what if we threw in I like the concept of a 101, like take people back to the classroom and give them like a little physics 101, where even I can, sometimes I don't understand what Luca is saying.
Well, that's a good part of it, is that you can be that objective voice. Mm. Yeah.
So I was like, let's add a 101. Then I was like, okay, let me try and add this type of piece. It's like, what if you took that an octave higher? Then I'm like, okay, Luca knows what octaves are. So I'm like, okay, what if you took that an octave higher and then only started with one hand and then added at the left hand?
Yeah.
Like after I start speaking a bit, you know, like increasing the pace of my speech. And that worked perfectly. So it's like there's a lot of back and forth.
You guys are a band.
Yeah.
You are a band. Like don't actually think you're anything less than, because that's exactly that. You've got to fit together. Yeah. The moment you've added this music, you it's a performance.
There is, my favorite part is on a Saturday, we meet at his house at 11 for like 5 hours, and there's this creative flow that happens where there will be a part of the talk, and maybe it's on atoms. And he says, okay, just speak about atoms. I don't know. And He closes his eyes and he just starts kind of meandering on the piano keys up and down, and he hits a chord. I'm like, oh, that's a pretty cool chord.
Mm.
And then he says, all right, let me pick that chord, and expands music upon that particular chord. And then I will say what I was saying about the atom, but now I've transformed what I'm saying based on the music that he's playing. So there's this emotional convergence between what I'm saying in terms of the feeling of what I'm saying and the music he's playing. And then we hit this point where like, yes. And that becomes the music we use. And the music informs what I say. What I say informs the music. And it's this interplay between the two, which is just, when it happens, it's beautiful.
That's literally what a short straw songwriting session is.
Yeah.
We jam, we'll play, we'll just do things. You just got to move. You just got to make noise, right? Just play, just play, just jam, just jam, just jam. And then someone would go do something. And it's literally what you just said. Ooh, that.
Yeah.
You build on that. Then L mumbles something, and you know, And then before you know it, you can write the majority of a song in half an hour.
Yeah.
80% of the song can be written in half an hour. Then the next 20% can take years to refine. And I'm sure that's the same with you guys, where you're like, you have the big chunk.
Yeah.
It's going to be about this.
Yeah.
But then you will fine tooth it for months to get it perfect.
Yeah, completely, completely.
Even the current show, we're like, it's just gotten incrementally better over the past year.
No, and we're doing little things now, the way we always start that song, the way we always end that song.
Yeah.
You know? But it's interesting.
Yeah.
You guys have wandered into our video store, so I'm assuming you've got something to return.
Yes.
What are you? What have you been watching recently?
I, after many years of people telling me to watch this, I decided to give it a go.
Yeah.
And it is Friends.
Ah!
Yeah.
So have you got some box sets?
I got about a mountain of box sets.
Where are you now in the show?
I'm at the point where Rachel just finds out that Ross loves her. Because Chandler mistakenly said that he once bought this gift for this girl he loved in high school. And that's how he sort of brought it out to Rachel that Ross loves her.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wait, what fucking rock were you under that you missed this? I don't know how anyone could possibly miss it.
So I was mostly informed based on what my parents used to like in terms of growing up in TV. And Frasier was the show that we used to watch.
That was a bully show.
Frasier,
as a kid, I was like, this is for adults.
No. I feel like it's part of me embodies who Frasier is. This desire to live this high life, but it really struggles with girls. And I mean, the funny story is the reason why I started watching Friends is because I was talking to someone on one of the dating apps, and she really liked Friends.
Yeah.
It's always your
entry in.
That's the reason why we do anything. The reason I started to play guitar. Learn how to sing is like someone really liked the girl I knew really liked the Lumineers, and I'm like, I have to be able to play their top song. So I learned guitar and how to sing. So I was like,
you and every male musician in the history of like human civilization has learned how to play the guitar to meet women.
For a girl.
What are you returning, Yash?
I'm rewatching a little bit of Game of Thrones.
Oh shit!
Yeah, specific scenes.
Okay.
What I love about that is, throughout the 8 seasons, there's this constant, and something we're trying to improve about the show is there's this constant theme of music that, I mean, we all know the theme.
Sure.
But it reemerges in different ways, different keys, different tempos.
That's a motif. Hey, is that the word? Which is like the signature theme that you know in music, which usually comes out in its kind of intro song, but you would play a variation of it, and that term is a motif.
And there's a little bit of a dopamine hit, like every time you hear it in a slightly different way, you're like, okay, that's the theme, but now it's being played on a different instrument in a different key, and it's like it just sparks something inside people. Even like Luca loves Interstellar. Anyway, I ended up, I didn't really watch it when it came out, but then we watched that docking scene, you know, the thing is spinning and now you've got to dock this station while the thing is.
He would send me reels on Interstellar just nonstop after we started doing the show. He's like, I didn't know this is space. This is cool.
Wormholes, black holes. These are cool things. But rewatching Game of Thrones.
It's cool that you can come back to Game of Thrones because perhaps your first time around you weren't conscious of the music as much.
I wasn't exactly conscious of it. And now we're trying to more intentionally weave a specific theme throughout the show. So currently I've got very cool individual compositions.
Mm.
But what we want to really improve is, okay, what is that underlying consistent thing that people are like, oh, that's the way they started. Now it's like
it's a callback. It's what a comedian uses. It's a technique called callback, which is like they're going to reference a joke from 20 minutes ago. And audiences love that. Yeah. It's an important part because you're a part of this journey where you're like, I know what he's talking about because I was there when he said it 10 minutes ago.
There's something very important just to mention is that At the foundation of what our talks is actually a philosophical concept that is relatable to us as human beings. So each talk actually has a philosophical undertone, and you know, in the first talk, the philosophical undertone is the potential of a human being that is engaging in an idea that they have for many, many, many years. And what would happen if you know, we all have these ideas in our mind, things that just kind of have like they take hold of us, that I wake up and 5 years later I'm still thinking about the same thing.
Okay.
Why don't we just delve into that, actually sort of like go into that? Because people like Einstein, like many scientists, have had this constant thought that they've actually engaged with. So that's kind of the undertone for the first one. The second one is the potential of a conflict in our lives, a paradox. What would happen if we could just actually explore these conflicts in our lives and the new paradigms of reality that we would uncover by doing so? Now, these philosophical themes are essentially going to be anchored to a musical theme.
Yeah.
And so the idea is that throughout the talk, if you can play these musical themes, when you hit that philosophical nugget, it hits you in a way that is multidimensional from a musical perspective and a narrative perspective. And that's what we're trying to craft with the music, is these themes that are anchored to philosophical ideas which are resonant throughout the talk.
It's lovely that the show is so intentional. It just shows how smart you guys are.
We've got a lot of time.
Earlier this year, I don't know where you are in Game of Thrones, but earlier this year I stood on the Black Beach in Iceland, and there's that like cave opening.
Right.
Which is often used in Game of Thrones, where they sort of take that sort of secret boat, you know, out to the beach, which is lovely.
No,
and some of those shots from the Iceland locations were incredible. And it's so great to see that.
It's quite nostalgic to rewatch these scenes. I mean, around the point where there was a big battle where the guy squeezes his eyes out, and I don't think I can rewatch it. It was traumatizing, so I might.
It was with the mountain. The mountain did the squeezing.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take a quick little journey through our lives. Where did we grow up?
I was born in South Africa, but I come from an Italian family. So my mom and my dad are both Italian.
Yeah.
And so I probably before the age of 7 must have been up and down to Italy almost like 15 times.
Really?
We'd fly a lot for Christmas, multiple times throughout the year. I lived in Italy for a few years. So my upbringing is, let's call it by blood Italian, by culture Italian, but by birth and by environment South African.
Okay. We grew up in Joburg. You were born in Joburg.
Born in Joburg, grew up in Joburg, mostly lived in Joburg. Lived in Italy for 3 years, between 9 and 12 years old. Came back to Joburg, and I've been here my whole life.
Okay. And yourself, Yash?
Also born in Joburg.
Okay.
I've been here my whole life.
What was our puppy love film, which is the first film that perhaps came to you when you were a little kid? Set you in some motion.
It would have been a Disney film.
Yeah.
Because Disney is what I kind of mostly grew up with. So two come to mind. The first is The Lion King.
Yeah.
And the second is Anastasia.
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 Okay.
And there's a very specific reason, because she was cute.
Yeah.
I had a crush.
She was like a sort of redhead, hey?
I can't remember.
How does it always go back to a female?
Since I was a child, I don't know. I have this you know, attraction towards beauty, and I just found Anastasia the most beautiful person I could think of as a 6-year-old. I don't know.
I love some of the internet sort of looking back, going like, I found Nala quite sexy, and people going like, that's kind of weird for me now because she's a lion.
Yeah.
But like, there's that one shot that people have screenshotted, and they're like, that's the point where our childhood got complicated.
Yeah.
Because we now like became somewhat sexually attracted to a lion.
Banana and Nala and Simba are rumbling around in the jungle.
Yeah, it's in the Can You Feel the Love Tonight? It's like there's a look, which is like, you know, we're gonna roll around in the leaves tonight. What's a movie you can think of?
A childhood movie was, I don't know if you remember this movie called Homeward Bound.
Oh yeah.
So the two dogs and a cat that have to find their way back home.
And they all speak.
Michael J. Fox,
Sally Field, and I forget who the golden retriever is.
Yeah, I think most people do, unfortunately.
We've done that once or twice at the Bioscope. Mm-hmm. We call it Ugly Cry Night, where you watch these like tear jerkers and you get a pocket pack of tissues and an ice cream. It's glorious.
Has the Fox and the Hound been featured?
It should. Oh, God. Jesus. Those are heart wrenches.
Yeah.
No, but that one was funny.
Yeah.
In a nice way, and it was cute.
Yeah, and I remember like that scene at the end where Shadow is trying to get out of that mud pit, and he just couldn't. Wasn't he in a drain?
Wasn't he in a drain?
Yeah, some sort of in the train
station. Like a construction pit or something. Yeah.
But it also had this amazing theme.
Were you noticing soundtracks at that point?
Not intentionally. I think we all like sort of subconsciously remember the theme and how it invoked the emotion.
There's no way that you would cry in the shadow scene if it didn't have the music.
Exactly.
You know, if you watched it on mute, we know this. It would leave you cold. Yeah. It's all in the music.
I think the first theme, then like a few years later, then Pirates of the Caribbean, the first one came out. And that was the first theme intentionally. I was like, it's not an easy theme.
Yeah.
Like if you think about how complex the composing is.
Who was that?
That was Zimmer. And then that was the first one where I actually learnt it on piano by ear. So I remember we had our PVR.
Yeah.
And I recorded it. And then the best part of the theme was when the end credits happened, and then because that's when the full theme plays from start to end. Mm. And the TV room was not too far from my little upright piano.
Yeah.
So I would go and rewind and I'd listen to the first minute and then go and learn it, and then listen to the next minute and then learn it. That was the first time where I was like, these movie themes are incredible.
I've always had a big place in my heart for the Forrest Gump suite, which is like a sort of 4 or 5 minute, it's even longer, it's maybe about 10 minutes, which are all the phrases of the score.
Yeah.
I think it's Alan Silvestri. But the one part, which is the part where you first hear it, where Forrest is running and away from the boys, you know, the classic run, Forrest, run moment. But his braces of his legs, shackles break off. And that particular moment, that music, it's lovely. That gives me goosebumps. Over to high school. Where were we in high school? Kez, you said, hey?
I went to, King Edwards.
Okay. You say King Edwards. I say Kez.
I don't know why I say King Edwards. It's very old of me.
And this is when Luca's cookie business started.
Yeah.
What did we call the business?
I didn't give it a name because I wasn't technically allowed to sell cookies on campus. I had to pay, I think it was like 65% tax to the school if I had to did that. And so I was doing it in secrets, in hiding.
It's underground.
So it was the closest, to you could get to probably a drug operation.
I literally felt like a mafia. So basically, I would give money to people because I was joking.
Breaking Bad started.
Yeah.
So I had a little. I had to hide the cookies inside my duffel bag. So I'm walking around with. I'm walking around in a duffel bag with cookies.
Yeah.
But people discovered that was a cookie duffel bag. So I would go into class and I would come back and there would be a break-in where there were crumbs on the floor because people had stolen my cookies.
I think an important part of this is that clearly the cookies were good.
They were really, really good. And then sometimes prefects would catch me selling them and like, you're not allowed to do that. So I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like,
did you pay them off in cookies? It's lovely. It's like, how many cookies is it going to take to make this go away?
There was one water polo guy with a massive hand. He's like, I'll take the cookies. And he puts his hand inside the tin and he just picks up like 8 cookies in his one finger, in his one hand.
And you're like, that's a week's profit.
And he's like, thank you very much. I would give then, I'd be like a loan shark. I'd be giving money to people because I was carrying cash all the time. So people needed money for going home to the taxi. They wanted like lunch for to buy food. So I would give them money with a bit of an interest rate back. So in about a week, they would give me back another R5 for giving the money back. Some people wouldn't pay me back, so I had to go find them and be like, yo, where's my money?
I love how you became like a bank.
Yeah.
You were not a cookie business.
People would give special orders. This one guy wanted a 30-centimeter size cookie. So I baked him a special order cookie for him.
But wait, you were doing the baking or your mom?
I was doing the baking.
You were doing the baking?
Yeah, yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
This is a future movie.
Yeah. What movies do you remember from high school?
So in high school, I would say Interstellar. I think Interstellar wasn't high school. It was
makes some sense.
It was after.
Perhaps a bit after, but yeah, Interstellar comes up often, which is lovely. But I just love that for you, it really sparked some bigger paths.
Yeah, there've been a couple of movies that I think. So there was a friend of mine that he was. I had a friend that I started studying with, and he was huge into movies, and he introduced me to things like Memento, and he loved these very cerebral kind of movies.
Yeah,
and I never realized like the power of perspective change a movie can give to you. I used to go to watch movies at the cinema. My favorite thing was actually to watch a movie by myself at the cinema.
Yeah,
I
remember discovering that you can go do that by yourself.
Yeah.
I remember it clicked in my head once. I was like, why do you need to go with someone? Because you just sit by yourself. You don't talk to them. You can very easily go and do this by yourself in the cinema. No one would care. This is your thought pattern where you're like, but I would be by myself.
I think people are going to judge us.
Yeah, I remember having that thought and then going like, that's silly.
Yeah.
Nobody gives a shit. And then I've watched so many movies by myself.
Yeah. I mean, like Transformers as well. I loved watching Transformers by myself at the movie. I got so excited.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but
was that Megan Fox? Then?
That was more for Megan Fox, let's be honest.
There was this one scene in one of the Transformers, I think in the second one, where, what's his name? Weeki or something like that. He's in this class for first year physics, and he's like, reading through the textbook, and he goes on the white blackboard. He's like, Einstein was wrong, and he starts going crazy.
Yeah,
and I just really liked that scene. I don't
That's
know why.
Yash, in high school,
I had this weird memory of Signs by M. Night Shyamalan. Yeah. I was watching that movie on a plane, and you know, back when there was one big screen at the front
you all
of a
watched
plane,
it,
and everyone watched the movie at the same time. And I remember being captivated by this movie. I was still relatively young, like junior high. And again, there was this constant creepy, eerie music theme and this debate about what's going on. Are there aliens? What's happening in this movie? And then right at the end, there was this philosophical reveal where it was all about the fact that everything happened for a reason to save the guy's son's life. And then all of a sudden, the music was creepy throughout, but then it just takes a slight change
not as creepy.
It's like more uplifting, and that movie is, I don't know, it sticks with
me. Yeah, his earlier stuff was a lot better, and Signs was great. What was smart about Signs is that you a little bit like Jaws, you didn't really see the aliens, and not showing them was its strength. You know, there was just that home footage where you saw it just walk past at that kid's party, or that
scene haunts me till
it's
till today.
It's fucking scary. Over to varsity, you were at Wits. Where did you study, Yash?
Also at Wits.
Yeah. Okay. And when we're growing up and exploring more, and minds are being blown and hair is being pulled out, what films came to you then?
There's a particular film that I wouldn't say it is the greatest film in all of like cinema history, but it was really powerful. It's the Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
Yes.
Now,
very smart movie.
Very smart.
I want to quickly touch on, you used the word cerebral.
Yes.
Which is like, I guess in short, you could say it's a film that makes you think.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Netflix has an infinite amount of categories.
Yeah.
And there's actually people paid by Netflix to sit and come up with categories that don't even exist. They don't even have movies for them yet, but they're building these keywords, they're building these things, and when these movies come in, they, you know, there's people that are tasked, or algorithms, or certain things that are trying to create the best algorithm for you.
Yeah.
I remember once seeing Netflix's selection of cerebral movies. It literally, that was a keyword that came up, and every single one of those movies, I was like, "This is my jam."
Amazing.
And you know, and The Secret Life of Walter Mitty is cerebral. It has you think a lot more.
It's you know, Mr. Nobody as well was one of those movies that just
Nobody
with Jared Leto.
I haven't seen that.
I mean, that is a wild movie as well. Okay. Really fantastic. Even things like you had the one with the drugs with Jared Leto.
Requiem for a Dream.
So they're quite intense movies, but so my favorite thing about a movie is when they explore topics that people find difficult to talk about, or that you shouldn't be talking about.
Yeah.
They go there. They go in places that are either taboo or are difficult to hold in a very sort of well-balanced manner.
Yeah.
You know, the sort of, The Secret Life of Walter Mitty to me was more about that emotional story of just the call to adventure.
Yeah.
That's something that is very powerful within me, this call to the unknown, to go into something that I have no, you know, basis of reference.
Can we use this now as a segue to talk about this bizarre but exciting new chapter in your life? Are you ready for it?
Let's do it.
Speaking of call to adventure and doing things out of your comfort zone, you are going to become like a pageant. What's the male version?
King.
A pageant king. You have entered into Mr. South Africa.
Mr. South Africa. I am one of the official contestants to Mr. South Africa. It was honestly sparked from this call to adventure.
Yeah. I was like, well, how did that come to you?
About a couple of months earlier into their film competition. So I as a society, so my sister's a filmmaker, and yeah. and I was brought up as well, like with film and all of that. And I am a hobbyist filmmaker. So I entered this 48-hour film competition, and we ended up winning it. Yash was the composer for it.
Of course.
And it was...
I would not have...
Yeah, he won best composition. But it was one of those things where we had no right to enter this. We don't have the right qualifications, the skills, the backgrounds, but we just did it because it was fun. And the things that you learn from that is phenomenal.
Mm.
So at the end of this, I was thinking, what else could I do? What else is so outside of my comfort zone? And Mr. South Africa was one of those things that one of my friends suggested I try. I entered it, not thinking much of it. 4 months down the line, I get an email saying, congratulations, you're one of the contestants.
Okay.
And I was like, all right, we're doing this. You
know? How many people do you think apply?
I'm not sure. I'm guessing probably in the regions of a couple hundred.
Yeah.
And initially, there were, I think, 60 people that became the official contestants.
Okay.
And they take your ID number, so they do like background checks to make sure that no one weird is inside there.
Yeah.
They get a picture of you, and you, I think, a short bio, and that's sort of the entry criteria.
And what does it mean to you? Like, what is?
So yeah.
Because the one thing I do get is the fact that it's not just a vacuous sort of just face, you know, just your face. They do, and they have evolved over the years.
Yeah, there is a guy called JP Roberts. I think he's the new CEO of Miss South Africa, and he's really trying to elevate the brand into something that I think is resonant with what a male role model should be within the country. You know, someone who's not necessarily intellectually there, but someone who looks after themselves with their mind, their body, someone who has strong values, someone has a strong sense of self, someone who's a philanthropist, and someone who's understanding the nuances of brand and marketing, and basically can be a good representation of the brand to the outside world.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not one who cares about your brand, and I think it's important. I always try to not be super, like, ego-driven. But to me, I'm seeing it as a story. What story can I craft of who I am that is inspiring for other people? Because that's why I started Universe on Stage. And that whole quote about the most powerful thing that we have in society is the mind of someone who's willing to learn.
Mm.
In other words, curiosity. Every great thing started from the seed of curiosity.
Mm.
So if I can somehow, through the network of Miss South Africa, showcase what a curious mind can do to inspire that in others, then that's why I'm there. This is what I'm trying to do. And this is, you know, who I want to be.
When does it play out?
What's
the timeline?
So mid-August is the announcement of the top 10. Leading up to that, you basically have to get people to vote for you, which has been a fascinating...
It's a weird one, yeah.
I feel like I'm lobbying for votes and like saying, hey guys,
you become a politician of sorts. Yeah.
So there's a voting round. You basically have to do some community service, some charity work. You have to get brands to advertise and be part of you.
In fact,
you know, Russell, you're one of the official advertising partners to Luca's Mr. South Africa journey.
Yeah, you messaged me and I was like, I would love to be involved and help you, you know. So for a little amount of money, the Bioscope is behind you.
Yeah.
And then
the Bioscope was there to launch like what I'm doing. And so it's been a pivotal part, a seed into my creative sort of journey.
Yeah, and I can imagine that you on the list of other applicants, I mean, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
You must be one of the few that have a science background.
Yeah. I think intellectually speaking and academically, I haven't met anyone, but I'm pretty sure I'm quite sort of on the fringe there.
Yeah.
But I met a couple of them and they're incredible stories. I mean, there's a particular guy who owns a farm out in Limpopo and he does the feeding schemes for the schools. There is a guy that sort of came from literally nothing and has sort of balled himself. And it's beautiful people that are doing good things in this world. And I'm really honored to be like learning them and learning about them and being around them and just developing my friendship with them.
I think it comes at a very interesting time for me to be conscious of Mr. South Africa because what it means to be a male in 2024 has evolved and changed and needs to evolve and change more and is constantly, you know, we're having all the discussions. It's all coming to the surface. It's lovely. It's in a beautiful state of evolution. So to have male pageantry sort of be in amongst that
is
exciting. It's, I think it would just be just a fascinating thing to just be a part of.
Completely, you know, and I'm... people have been telling me, Luca, you need to start a TikTok account. You need to tell people the journey. So I think I'm going to do that. I think I'm going to sort of start this account where I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to try my best. And you guys are welcome to see you along the journey.
No, shout out to a good friend of mine, Claudine Ullman, who is a short, certainly not, you know, a sort of skinny, typical shaped woman. She's delightful. She's one of the nicest people I've ever met in my life. And she entered... Mrs. South Africa.
Miss South Africa.
Not the. There's the two. Oh. There's the more mature one. There's Mrs. and there's Miss.
Okay.
So and she did it solely to poke fun and it was a transformation for her. She was a guest on the Video Store deep in the early days, and it was just also just she came in it with like, this will make the most amazing comedy because she's a stand-up comedian. Yeah. And a theater performer, but she came out of it an evolved human where she's like, I see the world differently. These people are incredible. And
this is the power of new experiences.
Yeah.
It crafts new perspectives and enriches the soul of the person that engages in them, you know, and that's the beauty of it.
I think let's skip a little ahead. Let's go to the film that you could settle down with. This is like the film, one of your favorites of all time. Let's perhaps start with you, yes.
Favorites of all time. This might be a contentious choice, but I...
It's your choice. It doesn't matter.
I love the movie Castaway.
Okay.
With Tom Hanks.
Lovely.
And my parents, it's weird because I never watched it when it came out. I watched it on Netflix.
Yeah.
And then my parents are like, it's a bit slow. Like, this guy's on this island for like 2.5 hours. And I don't know, like this, and a lot of people say it's quite a slow movie. There's something about it where I don't find it slow at all. I get captivated by this guy's journey. And then I showed Luca this one scene at the end where, you know, he gets this Portaloo door that gets, you know, brought onshore. And that's the thing he needed to use as a sail to escape the island, and then he ends up adrift in the ocean, and then gets found. Then he does a speech where it's 4 years later, he's lost his now ex-wife because everyone has assumed he was dead.
Yeah.
And he gives a speech to his friend and he's like, you know, I had this moment on this island where I tried to hang myself.
Yeah.
But he had to test it with he created this wooden person and it didn't work as like the weight of the ropes couldn't support that weight. And then he had this moment where he realized he had to keep on breathing. Yeah. Then he gives a speech to his friend that says, you have to just keep breathing because you never know, even in the most difficult of times, you never know what the next day is going to bring. Like that one day, the ocean brought him this little Portaloo door that he could use as a sail, like 3 years into his lonesome time on this island.
And that resonated with you.
Yeah, I'm like, it's such a powerful message to say, like, even in the most, even the hardest of times, things could change in a single moment.
Yeah, it's lovely, man. They didn't get, FedEx wasn't a part of it. They got the blessing to use FedEx because I think they got the script and was like, it's okay. But it wasn't an official thing. That sort of, it was an afterthought that they were involved. It's interesting.
Right. It's quite funny because when you showed me that scene, I was like, I love that imagery of what like the tides bring in.
Mm.
And so we actually incorporated it into one of the talks.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. So there's this part of the talk we're talking about how our acquisition of knowledge before Newton was somewhat random, right? Meaning we would make some mistake and we see, oh, if I use if I use light and like the sunlight and it hits this at a bit of angle, it creates a shadow, but that shadow changes with time. And well, I can tell time with that shadow. And no one knew how these things work. It just worked, right? And so there's this sort of imagery that I say that before Newton, we lived on this island of knowledge. Right, and this island of knowledge was surrounded by the shores of trial and error, and the acquisition of new knowledge would we'd be brought by what the tides of randomness would bring in.
Slowly.
And I love that scene, and it was inspired by this thing.
That's so cool. I'm so glad that I got that out of you guys.
Yeah.
What is a film you could settle down with, Luca?
So
Miss Congeniality.
No. Could I actually replace the film with a series?
Yeah, of course.
So there's a series called The Leftovers.
Okay.
And what this was the most powerful series that I've ever watched in my life.
I think I've heard of it. Where is it? Where is it?
Gosh, it was an HBO series.
Okay, so it's maybe Showmax.
Yeah, it wasn't Showmax. Yeah. And it's composed, the music, what makes this series so powerful to me is two things, is that there's the music, which is composed by Max Richter, and oh my word. Like,
what's the show about?
So the show is about the world this event happens in the world where one day, I think it's like some percentage of people just disappear, just like that.
Like 95%. Okay.
Yeah,
okay. I think it's that the disappearance.
Yeah,
that sort of biblical reference where 95% of the world's population will just disappear.
Yeah,
okay.
And so you think it's a sort of science sci-fi movie, and oh, how did it disappear? What was the science behind it? It was a story about loss, the story about how human beings deal with loss, with sudden loss, and it was so beautifully and compassionately portrayed within these different stories. And there was the main character who suffers from almost this fear of going crazy because his father went crazy. And the show goes on where he's losing his mind and he's seeing things. And the reason why it's super powerful, because one of my greatest fears is to lose my mind. And the way that he holds the tension of, is he losing his mind, is he not, combined with the music, combined with the narrative. And it hits powerfully in this one scene where he's just had this like vision. And he's in his apartment and his partner walks in and he's been acting very strange. And she looks at him. She's like, are you okay? And the expression in his face, his eyes just go red, tears go down, and he breaks out. And he's like, I think I'm going crazy. And that one sentence just put me into tears because it represented it so powerfully, my biggest fear.
Yeah. Have you seen A Beautiful Mind?
Yes.
Yeah, with Russell Crowe.
Completely.
I watched it recently.
Completely.
Yeah.
So it just
shows that unraveling.
Yeah. It's emotionally charged. The music was brilliant. And so, yeah, for me, if there's one thing I could watch for the rest of my life, it would be The Leftovers.
Okay, lovely. That's so good, guys. Listen, I think we could chat about this stuff all the time, but I think I'm going to let you guys get on with your day.
Thank you.
I appreciate you guys coming in. I usually find something for people to rent, but I think we've just been talking about so many other things. You were talking about a Requiem for a Dream and Jared Leto. Have you seen Pi?
I haven't.
Okay, so Darren Aronofsky's first film is this experimental. It's a bit more, when we speak of expression as opposed to creative problem solving, it's a bit more experimental and a bit all over the show. It's black and white. But you can see the seeds of what later became, you know, this incredible filmmaker's career. So it's literally, the movie is the symbol Pi. And it's about a guy like sort of losing his mind and... It's very arty and experimental, but it's out there.
Perfect.
So okay, so I'll rent you Pi.
I'll be watching that.
I'm not sure about you, Yash. I'm trying to think of what we can get you, but
something.
What are you in the mood for?
Sentimental.
Heartfelt.
Heartfelt. Yeah, traditionally, I know the movies I've quoted today they're not the typical. Like my typical type of movies are usually the Will Ferrell.
Lovely
type of genre.
Something a bit, a bit fun.
Like Step Brothers or Blades of Glory.
Have you seen Hot Rod?
No.
Okay, Hot Rod's the one I recommend.
Hot Rod's great. That's Lonely Island Guys.
Oh,
so
yes.
It's the Andy Samberg sort of start. Yeah. That's a good one. Yeah. No, let's get you watching Hot Rod. There's a very important part of Hot Rod is that they thought they were cool. And it came up. It came up as a perfect high school film for the comedian Skulk Bessenhout when he was on the show.
Oh, wow.
He's like, I really loved Hot Rod because I was like them. Like, we were misfits, but we thought we were cool.
Yeah.
And that was the most important part. lovely, guys. Thank you for your time. And just once again, thank you for bringing this to the Bioscope.
Thanks.
You know, with every show that we do, whether it's comedy or we've got this queer burlesque show that also always sells out when it rolls through, I always think these things line the walls kind of very figuratively of the bioscope. Sometimes literally we'll be pulling out sparklers and glitter from these burlesque shows. But I think you guys just are the fertilizer for the bioscope. It's enriching Joburg's mind. It's just giving people not just something to do on a night out, but like it's a night where you learn. It's a night where you just a little part of your brain is just broken open.
Yeah.
Where and you're like, even if you can't go all the way through, the door is at least cracked open or the window's open for you, like, think about black holes, bud. They're out there.
Yeah. No, you know,
you might not fully understand everything Luke is saying, but you are making it accessible, which is great. But just be curious and just. But
I think it's.
They're coming. They're selling out. We don't have to do too much. We've just got to keep it going. Yeah. We've got to let you guys grow. You guys need to go out and play some bigger venues, and it's just so exciting.
Yeah, I think like you said at the start, it's been an amazing grooming ground. Like every time we come here, we learn something more about our own act. Each week, I think we can pick like something new we've discovered.
That's lovely, and I'm so glad that I can be a part of it, because I want to just see you guys soar. I would be nice to have you always come back, but you know this is a chance to just get it going.
We're hoping we're actually planning a bigger show at a bigger venue in the next few months.
Mm.
And it would be cool if we were thinking, you know, maybe Russell could MC the event for us.
You mentioned that. Yeah, so, I would be honored. What would that entail?
So basically we're thinking, you know, hypothetically, if we go, for example, the Joburg Theatre, you would go and stand and you would essentially introduce us. You could tell the story of the origin story of how we came to the bioscope was the fertile ground, like you said.
Lovely.
And it all grew from there. And you know, who we are and just position us so that you're ready the audience to experience something they've never experienced before.
I would be honored. I would be absolutely honored.
Amazing.
Let's do it. All right. Thank you, guys. Thank you for your time. And we'll see you soon.
Thanks, Russell.
See you soon.
Cheers.
Oh, yeah. Show's in July. But we'll put the links in.
Yeah.
People will buy their tickets. You got to buy them now. All right.
Brilliant.
Cheers, guys.
Ciao.
Thanks. Cheers.
All right. What a good chat. And vote for Luca.
Oh,
keep
yes.
an eye on, got on
you.
Him
got you.
as he makes his way through the ranks of Mr. South Africa.
Oh, okay. Handsome boy.
Yeah, no, it's lovely. I just love that like added dynamic. So the bias
of being handsome.
For him. For
smart
like
and handsome.
For the show. Yeah. Well, let me tell you, we often have school screenings at the bioscope. So these set work screenings come through. Shout out to old Leon van Nierop, who was involved in Ballade van een Enkeling, which is what every fucking school in Joburg has to watch for Afrikaans set works.
Yeah.
So we host these screenings at the bioscope where they come, usually early on like a weekday morning, and they watch Ballade van een Enkeling.
Right.
Leon, who was involved in the writing of the film, is a customer, and there's a lovely episode with him in the archives. But we become a tuck shop for half an hour, 40 minutes, make a cuck ton of money.
Nice.
Let me tell you, we should all quit our jobs and become a tuck shop. But then what's great is I naturally talk to the teachers and we talk about other things that the school could come to the bioscope to watch. And I mentioned the other day, I was like, we've actually got this show that could actually even come to you.
Yeah.
You know, Luca and Yash could come to the school.
That's a great idea.
And you just expand their minds and get them excited about science and the universe.
Space is freaking cool.
And what I said to the white teacher, I said, and it doesn't hurt that the guy who does the talk is in the running for Mr. South Africa. And she's like, ooh. The girls will love that. You know, because funny enough, we've had more to do with girls' schools,
right?
Funny enough. Than
what,
co-eds.
High schools or primary schools?
They've been high schools. Yeah, St. Teresa's, shout out. St. Stithians came to the bioscope last week.
Oh,
the girls' school. So, cool. You know, I don't know how much science will go in when you, if you're focusing on Luca too much. But no, it is great. And what I've loved about about the universe on stage is being around them, talking to them about the show. They talk and they talk as if they're a band.
That's cool.
Right.
Hey, we're gonna play cute. Bigger shows, more venues. Yeah. And I'm like, I fucking love it.
Yeah, that's cute, man.
It's great. But they are so industrious and smart and together, and they are gonna do so well.
Kill
with
it,
this.
Yeah.
It's lovely. And they've also got, you know, these other jobs and careers. So this is just a thriving side hustle, which is just doing so well for them.
And he's handsome. Fucking asshole.
And he's handsome. Jesus. But what were we going to talk about?
You wanted to talk about a period piece of some sort.
There's this movie, speaking of like period, somewhat romances, there's a film coming out called The Madame Clicquot.
Okay.
It's based off a book. And this is about Veuve Clicquot, the champagne.
Sounds very familiar, yeah.
Set in, you know, however many hundred years ago in the sort of vineyards of the Champagne region.
Of course.
And this is the true life story of the woman who, like, took on the empire and, like, built the empire of the Clicquot
the champagne
brand. Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah, okay. And it's coming out. It's coming soon. No, I don't think it's anyone startlingly famous.
English, French, what is it?
French. Okay. French. Yeah, French. Okay. I just see it coming. It's like it's on the distance. I don't know much about it, but it's going to be released in cinemas, and I've already put up my hand to the distributor, and they've said, no, it's a good film. So. Cool. So The Madame Clicquot, and I think they've just released a poster for it. There's just one trailer.
Right.
But it just looks like a bioscope movie.
Yes.
Okay.
And so I'm excited for that.
Also, we spoke about it, but we didn't bring it up in the chat at any point. There's a movie coming out in a few weeks called Fly Me to the Moon.
Yeah,
it looks period. It looks really fun.
And also, speaking of space, space travel with all the universe on stage. Yeah, for the longest time, it was just called Untitled Channing Tatum
Scarlett
Johansson film in the release schedule that gets distributed around South Africa.
Yeah, that title doesn't roll off the tongue, hey?
Yes.
Like.
Yeah. But it looks really cool. And it's on its way. It's gonna be early July.
Is the movie called The Widow Clicquot?
The Widow Clicquot. Oh, did I say it wrong?
I think it is Widow
Clicquot. Did I say Madame?
Yeah,
no,
I think so.
The Widow Clicquot. Because the husband dies. So she, that's it.
Yeah.
It's a cool poster.
Yeah, very cool.
And she becomes the widow. And so she has to look after and maintain the Clicquot sort of brand and family.
Okay.
Looks very cool.
Mm.
No, it's just exciting.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And it's just, I think more than ever, we just need to talk about what's coming up.
Yes.
So that people, like, if you're not in the bubble, you don't know.
You don't know. It's crazy how, like, I always assume everyone knows.
Yeah.
Like whenever I see on, Facebook comments, like, for The Fall Guy, right? People are like, first time I'm hearing of this. I'm like, how the fuck is this the first time you're hearing about this?
Yeah.
It's Ryan Gosling, Emily
Blunt.
Yeah.
And I saw it coming.
Trailers were on every fucking movie we went to, you know?
Yeah, but that's the thing, is it just so you realize that so many people just don't go to movies.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, Barbie was that first little thing a lot of people had to pay attention to.
Yeah, because it was
because
everywhere.
So many people were saying, this is the first movie I've seen in cinemas.
In like 6 years.
For many, many years. Not just pandemic.
Yeah.
And that's when big Hollywood should have gone like, oh, maybe.
Yeah, the thing is, that whole like Barbenheimer thing that happened was completely like organic.
It's a phenomenon. Yeah, it was free marketing.
Like, studios can't.
You can't recreate
that.
It was such a special,
insane,
it was such a special moment.
Yes.
Yeah.
And and something like The Fall Guy really should have done a lot better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not entirely sure why. You know, we've spoken in our Clerks episode earlier this week. We spoke about, you know, the reality of why a film like Furiosa didn't do as well as they expected. It's like, because it's fucking bonkers and weird.
It is bonkers and weird.
It's an awesome movie, but like, we have had this false sense of how successful those films were.
Yeah.
But a movie like The Fall Guy, that should have really done.
Yeah, because it's
a great movie.
It'll do well on streaming.
But
yeah,
it'll
do great on streaming.
It will.
A lot of those films find their audience later, like Blade Runner 2049 and Blade Runner found their audience on physical media.
Yeah.
Like, it'll be the same with Furiosa, I reckon.
Yeah. No, sure. No, well, Hitman's a good example. It's like, we just knew it was never going to be a cinema movie, but it is perfect for the couch.
Yeah.
It's such a great couch movie.
Yeah, I rewatched it. It's so good, man.
Ooh, lovely.
Anyways.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. And thanks for listening thus far. Hope you enjoyed it. We've got links to where you can get tickets to watch The Universe on Stage at the Bioscope. But I do implore you to follow them on Instagram. And if you go to theuniverseonstage.com, I believe. We will have the correct link. One of the first things you can do is sign up to the mailing list where you can hear more of them. And as they develop new shows, you can come and watch those. But yeah, over to thevideostore.co.za. There's links to other guest episodes. Mm. So there's other folks similar.
Cool.
And yeah, thank you for listening.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you for a lovely day, you two.
Yep.
All right. Pleasure.
We'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.